You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. I'm Alex Knight, and I'm joined by Michael Norton, Chief Creative Officer. How are you, Michael, on a Friday afternoon?
So SpaceX landed a rocket on a boat, which is pretty freaking cool.
I was actually just going to say, I thought we were on a boat right now.
Well, that's what the song seems to suggest, yes. But no, it's the rocket that's on the boat. So SpaceX, on their latest mission to send a big bouncy castle to the ISS. Yes, that's right, bouncy castle. Wow. More accurately, an inflatable crew module is being sent to the International Space Station as we speak. Actually, I think the Dragon capsule already docked. Maybe. I'm not sure. But
well, this is pretty monumental. This has never been done before, right?
Well, SpaceX has already done it on land, but what makes this especially crazy is that the first stage of an orbital rocket came hurtling back down to Earth at a monumental speed, and then using reserve fuel power, managed to slow itself down enough to land on a drone barge floating on the ocean, roughly the size of a football field. Actually, no, it's smaller than a football field.
Yeah, I thought it was, but yeah, when you say it like that, that's really impressive.
Yeah, like they landed a incredibly fast moving object onto basically a postage stamp in the middle of the ocean.
Wow.
Without it tipping over or exploding or anything. It's just sitting there now. And the what did he call it? They've named both drone ships in the style of the, I'm drawing a blank here, but there's this big sci-fi series and all the ships have AIs and the ships have names that are like, I'll always love you or stuff like that. So
ships that have AIs. I've never heard of this.
The Culture okay. Series. Oh. So the one on the East Coast by Canaveral is just read the instructions, and the one on the West Coast, which is the one that the first stage of the Falcon 9 rocket landed on, is, I think it's called I Will Always Love You, or something about love. I forget exactly. But yeah, they have weird names in the style of that book series. Yeah, so this is a monumental achievement for space exploration, particularly because that rocket can be reused,
right?
Which dramatically cuts down the cost of sending things into space in the first place.
So what we now need is we need not only a rocket that can land, well, actually, I guess presumably if we've done a successful landing on Earth, could we not have it land automatically on another planet like Mars?
No, almost certainly. I mean, a computer is far better at calculating orbital mechanics than we are at this point.
Presumably would be less risky than a human being piloting it.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's even less room for margin with a human being controlling something.
Yeah. With a computer doing the math, it can pretty much go anywhere in the solar system it wants to, as long as it has enough fuel.
Right.
So.
And I guess that's also another thing that I would love, and I really hope I live to see the day where we come up with some radically new, more efficient way of powering ships, because it's really ancient technology to use rocket fuel. It's incredibly expensive. It's incredibly wasteful. And if we ever want to leave the solar system and do long journeys with human beings, we need to do something. And I know that NASA's experiment, they've done you know, some design work and I think all simulations with like nuclear powered spaceships and stuff like that. But we're, yeah. those are still far away.
They also have a working theory for warp drive. I think they are in the middle of experiments to see whether it would pan out, like very low level experiments just to test the theories.
Right.
But
warp drive that would not break the speed of light, because I thought that was impossible.
Yes. So the way this warp drive works is, and it's probably similar to the way the warp drive on Star Trek works, only there's no subspace.
Is there space folding involved?
Yes.
Because that is so, the only way you could really travel long distances.
So the ship would essentially create a high energy envelope around it, and the energy would essentially curve space at the front edge of the ship that would allow it to slip through space-time.
Right. They could call it a slipstream drive.
Yeah, they could. They could. And basically it's like, you're not technically breaking the speed of light, but because you're bending space-time, it's like throwing out a slip and slide,
right,
to your target destination. You get there way faster than you would have ordinarily, but you're not technically breaking any rules of physics.
I wonder how they would like practically implement a design where you could, that demonstration that scientists always do about folding space, where you take a piece of paper, fold it in half, and poke the pencil through,
yeah,
and that's how you travel from one end of the galaxy to the other. But like, how the hell would you do that with a ship? Like, how much power would that take? Like, what's actually involved? Like, I'm trying to wrap my brain around this. I don't really understand how that works.
If you could, well, that version of creating a drive to go somewhere would be essentially creating an artificial Einstein-Rosen bridge, which is to say an artificial wormhole. We actually have no evidence that wormholes exist. We know black holes exist, but we haven't seen any wormholes. The theoretical physics suggests that they should exist, but we haven't seen any. So
right.
Assuming that they do exist and you can artificially create one, the power requirements would be immense. And we would have to harness dark matter or some kind of exotic matter particle mm-hmm. capable of creating an energetic reaction many times larger than, for example, our star.
And there are, speaking of black holes, there are theories about what would happen to somebody if they tried to go through a black hole.
Well, I mean, the leading theory was that you would spaghettify, but there are alternate theories about it that suggest you might fall into another universe or...
So basically, what we saw in Interstellar.
I mean,
that was 100% accurate, was it not?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Oh, yeah. That's where I learned my science from, folks.
Yeah, you know, future humans become magic 4D beings that live the Tesseract.
I trust Matthew McConaughey. All right. Learn my science from Matthew.
That whole thing was just nonsense, really. I mean, there is a fourth dimension, but ideas on how it would actually work, who knows? So I mean, a lot of this is theoretical at this point, but...
So what's the next step for SpaceX?
Well, I think the next step for SpaceX is probably... I'm not sure. I think maybe going to the moon, that might be a feasible next step for them.
What about affordable space travel for citizens?
I'm not so sure.
I thought that was on the agenda, or that was the end goal, was to make affordable travel for
people. I'm not so sure that they're concerned about that at this point. I know Bezos is concerned about that with his company. And I know, of course, there's Virgin Galactic, which...
Who wanted to do the space elevator? Was that SpaceX or was that somebody else?
A lot of people have talked about a space elevator, but Nobody knows if you could actually build one.
Right.
Just because of the orbital rotation of the Earth, you might not be able to stretch a cable out into space that would hold because of the gravity and the shearing force of the planet moving at 600,000 kilometers an hour or a second. I forget how fast the Earth moves, but really fast. So, I mean, a cable stretching out into space would need to be many times stronger than any cable we've ever built.
Yeah, we thought building a wall between the United States and Mexico was difficult.
Yeah. I mean, all of this is very like, maybe we could do this. Like, it's all very, very early stage for most of these things. And obviously, if certain theories about physics are proven wrong, then some of them may become impossible. Like, if their early scale experiments on the warp drive fail, then it would basically tell us that there's no way to go faster than light, even cheating. In which case, our only available option to see the stars would either be generational ships or...
Generational, you mean actually raising, like people die and raise a family.
Yes.
And the next generation, yeah.
Yeah. That would be the most basic way to do it.
That's a somewhat depressing idea.
Or cryosleep, or we actually find a way to create an artificial wormhole, which is even more difficult than the first idea.
What if we meet wormhole aliens like in Deep Space Nine?
Or Farscape? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
Suddenly this has turned into a science podcast. But no, seriously, the SpaceX stuff is very, very interesting.
Yes. And the thing that they carried up to the International Space Station is also really interesting. So I mentioned it was an inflatable crew capsule. It's made out of multiple layers of this proprietary Kevlar-like fabric and a few other things. This, I forget the name of the company, but they've been working on this for a long time, and this will be the first practical test of it in space. So they're going to attach this module to one of the sides of the International Space Station. It'll inflate and create this cylindrical space that people can go into. But for the purposes of this test, they will have a crew member just periodically go in and check sensors and readings. They want to make sure that the material can actually deflect radiation and that somebody inside the space would be safe for extended durations.
Yeah, that's kind of important.
Yeah. So they want to make sure that all of their assumptions about it are correct. All going well, this company is also working on building their own space station made out of these inflatable modules. It would be quite a deal larger than the International Space Station simply because of the volume inside. Instead of creating these long snaking corridors, it's just this large inflated space. And because of all the Kevlar layers, they're also saying it's more defensible against space junk. So with all those metal fragments flying around at the speed of bullets, apparently because of the way this material is constructed, it would just get caught in the upper layers of the bubble and it would never actually puncture it.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. But obviously, that's why they're attaching one of them to the space station so that they can test all of that out and see if it holds up. And if it does hold up, if it does deflect radiation the way they're hoping it will, then not only could this make space stations, it could also provide habitats for the first manned Mars mission, in theory. So like the HAB in The Martian could be made out of this material.
When do we get artificial gravity?
Duh.
Because I thought I remember reading at one point that the you know, the theory, you've probably seen this in Babylon 5 with the whole idea of a rotating spaceship is actually based on actual science.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if any object with mass that creates inertia will generate a gravitational field of sorts, a spaceship rotating only gives you the sense of gravity in that you're experiencing centrifugal force that keeps you pinned to whatever side is down at any given moment. So, I mean, it would kind of be gravity, but not quite. Like, it would be a trick, more or less. Mm-hmm. Like, your bones would still experience deterioration. Your muscles would still atrophy. It's nowhere near the same as Earth gravity. Hmm. Unless you spun it fast enough, maybe. I'm not sure. But there's never been a large scale test of that in space. So
maybe
there's no way to know.
Start testing. Yeah. That.
Well, NASA needs a lot more money, yeah. Don't they?
They do indeed. Well, maybe they should. Maybe the government should stop spending money on wars and start spending it on space exploration.
Oh, well, that's the big thing, isn't it? Got to fight that war on terror and drugs and this and that. We can't look to the stars or anything. No. Ah, yes. There is metadata evidence that you'll be able to remove stock apps from iOS. Yes,
I was excited about that when I saw that.
Yeah, I mean, so...
We nerds would yes. like options for other apps, like maybe not using the default mail app.
Well, that's a totally different thing to what this is. So...
Okay, so explain this to me then.
So this apps now have two additional metadata flags, is first party and is first party hideable app. So with those flags, we can safely assume that an app like Mail would be is first party true, is first party hideable app false. Mail is an intrinsic application for iOS. It's deeply embedded into the system framework. When asked about being able to remove stock apps, Tim Cook said, well, some apps aren't necessary for the operating system, and you could probably hide those. But there are other apps that I don't think you could just because of how tied in they are. That was the answer he gave. I'm paraphrasing a bit, but that was basically what he said. So my assumption is that they've decided on a certain set of apps that don't impact the operating system. So like stocks, maybe weather. But weather is still kind of important, so they might keep that.
What I don't understand is how is this different than on OS X? Because on OS X, you have that mail handler, whatever protocol, and you just say set as default.
Like, yeah, but that's different. iOS doesn't have the notion of that.
Really?
There's no hook in iOS for anything like
okay,
that.
Okay.
Like, they would have to add that functionality.
I guess they would have, if they really wanted to give people the option to change it in the first place, then when they built iOS, they probably would have decided at the time to, well, let's build that hook in there and make it available as an option at some point later on.
Yeah.
But the fact that they didn't means that they really didn't think or didn't want people to use anything else.
I don't think it's that they don't want. I think it's that they believe that they're providing the greatest value with the apps that are tied into the OS. By having an iPhone, by using iOS, you have access to a set of apps that pretty much cover all of your bases. Like, the average person is not the one buying, like, every other Twitter client or every other email client.
Of course not. No. That's not what I'm
or whatever.
Saying.
Or, like, replacement calendar apps. Like, your average person isn't doing any of that. They're using the stock apps, and that's just fine for, like, 90% of people. It's
yeah, but even if it's okay, let's say even if it's only 3% of iOS customers that want that option, that's still a lot of people.
It is, but
not that Apple has to care.
The added complexity, the thing is, the added complexity on iOS would be quite extensive. Think about it. You've got share sheets, you've got a lot of deep linking and a lot of various hooks in the system that are basically built around the idea that these particular apps are always going to be there. So if you start changing, well, this is the mail app now, or this is the calendar app now, you suddenly have to rethink a large portion of the OS to be able to support that. Like when they made iOS, they never intended for there to be other default apps. So most of the system architecture is built around these apps being the default apps forever. So they'd have to change quite a lot in order to accommodate that. And at this point, I feel like they probably don't want to. They would rather focus their time on making those apps better for everybody, most likely. And I mean, those apps are pretty good, let's face it. I mean, I personally have another calendar app I use. I don't use iOS Calendar, but that's me.
I have gone back to it. I used Fantastical for the longest time, but there were still a few things about it that bug me that are probably not things that they can do better, but they're just limitations of the OS. Like, I don't like how when I open up Fantastical, every once in a while when I bring it to the foreground, the whole interface just like flashes for a brief second as the whole UI is unreachable. Like the whole thing refreshes. You ever seen that where you open up Fantastical, the whole thing takes a second and it refreshes?
I've never seen that happen.
Maybe it doesn't happen on a 6S because things don't get purged from memory as often because I only have a gigabyte of RAM.
But yeah, maybe.
Actually, does the 6S have 2 gigabytes or is that?
It does,
okay,
yes.
That's what I thought. So maybe that is a RAM limitation and maybe I will not have this issue on a newer iPhone. But
do you mean the flash where it updates what day it is? And
no, I mean like I open the app and I want the first thing that I want to do is quickly create an event and the whole interface goes black for a sec and refreshes and comes back.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen that.
Okay.
But well, then I'm one of those special people where nothing seriously bad ever happens to me on an Apple product. I don't know. I'm like blessed or something.
Well, good on you. Good on you, Michael.
It's like people always go, oh, this always happens to me. iCloud always completely screws up and everything gets deleted. And I'm like, how is this happening to you?
You know, that's one thing that I actually been pretty lucky about.
Like, yeah.
Other than maybe Tweetbot having the occasional timeline sync issue.
Yeah.
Like the iCloud Drive stuff works really well. I've never had data loss ever.
Yeah.
With iCloud Drive.
I'd say the only thing I've probably noticed is iMessage, but then I think everyone notices the issues with iMessage.
Yeah.
It seems to be just...
Well, that's one thing I actually really hope Apple will improve in OS... Or sorry, not OS 10. In iOS 10 is make iMessage more like Slack in that it can handle like rich media previews. Like
yeah,
if you pop a link into
I'd
a
like
message,
see...
you can see a thumbnail of it.
Yeah.
You know, make it more like Slack or Snapchat or one of those things, because it's just, it looks so dated now. Like other than the fact that the messages are going over cellular data rather than SMS and the fact that the iMessage has blue color bubbles instead of green. I mean, there's really isn't that much difference between the two, like visually.
Yeah.
And so
I would like
making
to see
it a little more rich would be
I would
nice.
Like to see iMessage specifically gain more functionality. That would certainly be nice. I guess they felt like they have to maintain some kind of equilibrium between iMessage users and text message users, but it's like they've already presented the narrative that people with green bubbles are sad and that you they're to be frowned upon, et cetera.
Yeah, well, what does it matter though? Because even if you're sending a message from one iMessage user to another iMessage user, if you put a link in the message, it would show a preview on both ends of what that webpage would look like.
Yeah.
If you're sending from iMessage to SMS, then they're only losing the preview. So what does it matter?
Well,
could you not still make it work that way? Like it just, I'm not sure. It's still sending the same data.
It really depends on the way the protocols work. So if they're adding a ton of extra functionality to iMessage's protocol and there's nothing in SMS that supports what they're doing, then they would then have to work twice as hard to come up with this compatibility layer.
That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is you're taking existing media that that all devices, that all smartphones understand, which is links, for example. I'm just using one example.
Right.
And a link is a link. Now, if you are iMessage user, the only advantage that you're getting a preview of the page.
Okay.
It's still a link. I see what you're getting. It's not going to break anything. So the legacy users are the SMS people that just get a hyperlink and that's it.
I think they want to try and maintain some kind of symmetry between it.
It's like if I send an HTML email to somebody that only can accept plain text, well, then they get the plain text message. Yeah. They don't get the benefits of the HTML, but it still gets there.
Yeah. It's tough to say what they'll do. I'm really not sure what they'll do there. I'm kind of the mind that they should just decouple iMessage from SMS and implement the Whisper protocol, make it even more secure.
Yeah.
And just be like, yeah, SMS sucks. We don't care about it anymore. This is iMessage now. Like, we're already at the point where people don't text anymore. Like, people just don't use SMS. People are on Facebook Messenger or Snapchat or Signal.
There are a lot of people with Android phones that still do SMS.
Yeah?
I have a lot of family members that use Android phones, and they don't use Snapchat, and they don't use Facebook Messenger. They use SMS.
Hmm.
And I'm sure that that is not an uncommon thing.
Hmm.
But you're right. I mean, it is becoming more prevalent that people use those other apps.
Yeah. Like, I almost feel like at this point, Apple can probably safely say, we're ditching SMS. Who gives a crap? iMessage forever. Like, they could do that right now. And maybe a handful of people would complain. And that's it.
But you would still need the ability. Wait, are you suggesting that they rip SMS out of the phone? Because that would break a lot.
No. Obviously, that's still a part of the SIM card.
Right.
But what I'm saying is,
are you saying separate iMessage from the message app? Like the message app becomes just the legacy?
No. What I'm thinking is they split it. So you know how on the music app, if you go to My Music, you've got
You got a separate
library
tab for your
and you've
library.
Got playlists.
Right.
So I'm thinking they add the same thing to the top of messages, and there's one tab for iMessage and one tab for SMS. And from then on, iMessage is its own thing. Conversations started in iMessage are iMessage conversations and have all of the features that iMessage supports.
And maybe going back to my wish list that I've had for so long, which we've talked about on this show before, is my wish that when I buy a new device that I should be able to just automatically sync up all my message history. Maybe that's something they could do securely if they were to kind of separate it like that. Maybe that is actually a problem with the current constraint of
possible
making this kind of like hodgepodge of iMessage and SMS in this legacy app.
The only edge case I can think of is that sometimes if an iMessage user loses data connectivity but is still connected to the network, it tries to send the iMessage as an SMS instead. So that's where it gets kind of screwy.
Right.
So, I mean, they could eliminate that feature, but then that's kind of like taking away useful feature.
This is going to be, even if we wanted to transition, it's gonna be a while before that stuff gets worked out.
And I feel like Apple's probably had this exact conversation internally.
No doubt, they've talked about this,
and they've basically come to the determination that this is a huge mess, and there's no really easy solution to decouple these things.
Well, to me, this is analogous of cable providers and cable TV. It's like, yes, we have other options and there are streaming. Yes, you can get Netflix, but it doesn't give you everything. And for a lot of people, you cannot just pull the plug on this legacy platform.
Yeah. And more so with Apple because they started by being a phone.
Right.
The benefit that these other services have is they never had to provide SMS support. Signal, Telegram, Facebook Messenger, they're all just online communications platforms. Slack too, in fact. They've never had to support text messages from regular phones or other smartphones. It's never been a concern for them. So they've been able to just create whatever codec, whatever API support they want, and just create these amazing features that put iMessage to shame. Yeah. But the thing is, iMessage can't do half of those things because it also has to juggle their own online messaging platform, but also the legacy stuff, as you said. So for them, it's kind of a balancing act to juggle these two things. And I think eventually down the road, SMS does die, but today is not that day. And Apple just kind of has to be conservative with what they do there, I think.
Let's take a break and talk about something important. Back in November of last year, we launched a podcast network here called Hologram Radio. And of course, this show, The Impromptu, moved to that network. And one of the best ways that you, the listener, can support our fine show and the network at large is by donating to us. And you can do that by going to patreon.com/hologramradio. We would sincerely appreciate it as we continue to work on new and fantastic high quality shows for you. Currently, I believe we have 5 shows on the network and there are a few others that are being worked on. So we try to have a show for everybody here. Whether you're looking for something that's more technology focused or something that is an interview show or something that is humorous, we try to cover it all. So please do that. Visit patreon.com/hologramradio. So that day is definitely not today, like you were saying. Who knows? I mean, that could take another 10 years to work out.
Well, I don't know, 10 years. I could see it happening within 3 or 4 years, maybe. Like, the carriers...
But the carriers would have... There would have to... Like, how... What is the role of the carriers in this? Because they would have to collaborate with them. The carriers would, at large, would have to commit to some new platform to say, okay, we're going to replace SMS.
No.
But how? You can't just have something that only Apple devices.
Well, no,
unless the whole industry, like if Android, iOS, and Windows Phone, and whatever other platforms exist, all use Signal for encrypted messaging, then yes, we could.
Yeah.
Potentially, just because you have to have data in order to have a cell phone.
Yeah, I mean,
so just
if,
use Signal for messaging.
I could see that happening. I could honestly see all the platforms adopting the Whisper protocol.
Because the thing is that if anyone, like Apple has the clout, they have the resources, they have the power to make something that would receive mass adoption. But I think to do this, they would have to do something like what they're doing with HealthKit. In that you cannot have this very closed proprietary thing that you don't collaborate with all these other players with. Otherwise, you wouldn't have mass adoption.
Yeah, but then there are over 100 million people on iOS devices now. Something like that.
Some crazy ridiculous number.
Yeah, so if they flip that switch, would it really matter?
Who knows? Maybe not. Maybe not.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people freaked out when the one port MacBook came out this year or last year. They thought it was the end of the world.
Oh, yeah.
The end of computing. Apple has gone too far.
Just like the MacBook Air was the end of the world because it didn't have a CD drive, right?
I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that Apple decided to do something majorly disruptive that
always,
we all thought was absolutely crazy, but then two years down the road, it was genius.
I honestly don't know why anyone is surprised by this. This is their MO. This is what they do every single day. They go, what can we kill today?
But it's not out of malice. It is not out of malice. It is genuinely coming from an area of how can we kill this legacy crap and make something better?
Exactly.
And that's exactly all it is. Yes, there are going to be rough spots. You can't make an omelet without breaking some eggs. And unfortunately, there's going to be a period where things are going to be painful. But yeah, eventually, the if you can get away from not having a myopic viewpoint and look a few years down the road, you would be able to see that this is actually a better solution for everybody. Yeah.
So this year, that thing is the headphone jack. That's dying this year, whether anyone likes it or not. And it will be replaced with an all-digital solution that arguably is far better than the 100-year-old tech that we're dealing with now.
I believe that it is happening, but I think for everyone to adopt this switch of going from analog to digital, I don't think the Lightning port is the answer. I think they might have to do a mini.
But it is, because Apple's on the USB-C board.
Right.
And there is supposedly a USB-C micro port being developed.
Well, that's where I was going with it, but because it would it not have to be some kind of like standard that everyone can adopt?
Yes.
Like Android phones would have to have this. Windows phones would have to have this.
So, you know how USB-C is also the port for Thunderbolt 4?
Right. That's right, because the one-port MacBook has that, which powers everything.
Yes. Well, the MacBook isn't Thunderbolt 4. It's just USB-C.
Oh, okay.
But the MacBook Pro that comes out this year will have the Thunderbolt 4 version of USB-C. But it's the same exact port design.
The exact same port design. So it's just the internals that are different.
Yes. So my theory is Apple is working very closely with the USB-C group, and Lightning 2 and USB-C Micro will be one and the same.
I guess that's where I get confused, and maybe you can clarify for me too, because there's Lightning and then there's USB-C. So as far as the technology is concerned, how different are those two? Other
Lightning,
than the actual physical connector, which is just, could be anything,
as,
I guess.
As far as I know, they're not dramatically different.
Right, they all work off of PCIe, do they not? Is it PCIe? Yeah, PCIe, I guess it would have to be.
Something like that,
they have
yes.
some kind of direct connection with the chip on the board or whatever, so like super fast data transfer.
Yeah, they do. So the only big difference, and this is kind of a big difference just in terms of device dimension, Lightning is about half as thick as USB-C. So that's part of what allows the iPhone to be so thin. USB-C is massive in comparison. So Android phones that use USB-C are only going to be able to become so thin because that port is so wide.
And I haven't been following the rumors, but is there anything that says that the iPhone 7 might actually have this new micro USB-C connector this year? Are we anywhere near that?
There is a rumor that says the port is thinner somehow.
Maybe they shaved a few.
So if you look at your Lightning port on your iPhone, you'll see that there's sort of a metal band inside.
Yes.
Supposedly they've removed that band to make the port smaller.
But it's still the same connector then.
Yes, in theory. But that rumor says to me that while they're in there, they might just change a few other things as well. And if Lightning is the port that becomes the micro version of USB-C, then it'll be one and the same. Like, they'll basically announce the iPhone 7 and say, this is the new USB-C. We're using USB-C for the iPhone now. USB-C is Lightning. Lightning is USB-C. And the new headphones also use this new USB-C spec. So then all the headphone manufacturers just have to go, oh, well, that's easy then.
Sure.
We just make micro USB-C headphones / Lightning headphones. And then any Android phone that wants to use it can use it. Any laptop that wants to add a port can add it.
That's actually interesting because that's something we haven't talked about is whether or not, I mean, I guess that would be eventual that MacBook Pros get rid of that stupid analog jack, which is flimsy.
Yeah.
And you just have the micro USB port on it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like once they do it to the iPhone, you can bet that they're going to do it to the iPad and the MacBook eventually. Like all of the devices that currently have headphone jacks, they will go away.
I've never thought that the arguments at removing the port have been because the new connector will be inferior. All the arguments are really, I have an existing device and I don't like the fact that you're changing this, because there, I don't think anyone could make any cogent argument that a digital connection would be better for sound quality. And not just for sound quality, but it is, if I had to plug in, if I had to choose a lightning port over a mini jack analog connector, you bet your ass I would choose the lightning port because it's way more sturdy.
Yeah, sturdy.
It clicks in.
Less interference.
Yeah, it's so better. So much
here's
better.
Here's the kicker. Lightning powered headphones will actually be powered.
Right, right.
Meaning you can have headphones that have noise canceling, a full DAC inside them.
You wouldn't
whatever
need batteries
you want,
or some power
no batteries.
Source. Right.
Exactly.
Well, that's
just
the biggest
plug
issue
it
with
right
all
into
that
the
stuff.
Phone. You just plug it right into the phone and all of that stuff is powered. There's no need for a battery pack inside. So you can have ridiculously light headphones that still have noise canceling, but they're being powered by the phone instead of the batteries.
And then this is a great opportunity for Apple's Beats brand to have a whole new line of of headphones
and
with noise canceling and all sorts
I'm almost certain that when they announce the iPhone 7, they will also be announcing that line of new Beats headphones to go with it. So that then people will have new headphones to buy that work with their new phone.
You know what frustrates me is that Apple is so willing to try all these different colors for their headphone accessories and for their cases and for their watches, but the Mac, their computers and their phones, we get like two or three color choices.
Yeah, well, I think it's different with metal. Like you can put
but
a case.
It's not that they can. They have the ability to anodize.
They
the
do,
metal.
But only certain colors are going to work. Like some colors work better than others. It's remarkably difficult to anodize like a really vibrant color into aluminum.
Doesn't have to be vibrant. Honestly, like a metallic blue would look amazing.
I mean, there are the iPod touches. I could see them adding some of those colors potentially. But to me, those colors feel a little childish. And I think the iPhone wants to be kind of a luxury professional sort of product. And I think having a phone that's that sort of peacock blue color on the back kind of goes against that branding.
But I could make, if I use that argument, how is that any different than Apple Watches? I don't think Apple wants the Apple Watch to be synonymous with childish products, and yet they have all these funky colors.
Well, that's different because that's something you wear. A phone is...
Well, Michael, I wear my MacBook. It's strapped to my back.
Oh, okay then. Well, that's totally different. I don't know. I think their marketing team just kind of associates the MacBook and the iPhone and the iPad for that matter. Like, that's their primary hardware. It's meant to be not only something that provides great utility, but it's also meant to kind of sit there as sort of a quasi art piece. Like it's not just your computer. It's also this beautifully honed sculpture of metal almost. I know I'm getting super like Apple fanboy here, but like the way they build these products, it's like just having the product sitting there on a table looks great.
Yeah, I get where you're going with this.
And if you color those products in something garish, it's not going to achieve the same effect.
I'm not saying they need to make a MacBook that's coffee brown.
No, and I don't think they would ever do that either. But
they're not going to go full Zune.
Nobody goes full Zune.
Okay, so let me ask you this. So the MacBook, I don't remember. Did they make a rose gold MacBook? There's gray, space gray. There's a silver,
there's
space
gold,
gray, and gold.
Space gray and silver, yeah.
But there's no rose gold.
I don't think they have yet. But
so they could at least make MacBook and MacBook, make the whole damn lineup available in those three colors.
Oh, I'm almost certain they will. I'm almost certain they will with the new refresh this year.
And I guarantee you people would buy a rose gold MacBook Pro.
Oh, yeah.
A ton of people.
But I will be buying the space gray because that
you're boring.
Looks amazing. Stealth MacBook. Come on. Stealth. It's like the black plastic MacBook in the day.
It's even worse to keep those things looking clean.
Is it though?
Yes.
I guess it is, yeah.
Have you product and as soon as you touch
it's not black though, it's a slate color.
Okay. All right. Well, this podcast is over.
Good day to you, sir. Ah.
Michael quits. I quit.
Though I think it is actually getting that time.
Yeah, we should wrap.
Yeah.
You've been listening to The Impromptu on Hologram Radio. I'm here with Michael Norton, and you can support the show by going to our Patreon page, which is at patreon.com/hologramradio, and give a buck or two, whatever you feel comfortable parting with, which would greatly help us continue to cover our operational costs, as well as fund all of our interesting ideas for new programs that we want to bring to the network. There's a couple in the works right now, and that would be greatly appreciated if you could do that. You can also check out our sponsors and shop at Amazon. And I know Michael shops a lot at Amazon, so do I. My wish list seems to be growing ever larger. But why not use our Amazon links? We have UK, USA, and Canada. So just choose the appropriate one, and there's no additional work on your part other than just continue to buy the same stuff you were planning to buy, and we get a portion of the sale. You can subscribe to the show in iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week, of course. And why not drop us a rating there or a comment that helps new people find the show? And if you do leave a rating, we will give you a shout out on the podcast. So why not do that? You can follow us on Twitter at The Impromptu. We're on Facebook under facebook.com/hologramradio. We're on Instagram at Hologram Radio Shows. And if you want to annoy Michael or I individually on Twitter, you can follow Michael at Zen Impulse, and I am at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send email to us the old-fashioned way, it's theimpromptu@hologramradio.org. That's theimpromptu@hologramradio.org.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.